Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Back in and rolling on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN, and joining me now to talk some Grizzlies, some NBA, maybe a little Cardinals as well, is Rob Fisher, Memphis Grizzlies sideline pre- and post-game host for FanDuel Sports Network on X, again, the Fish Nation. Rob, how's it going?
Good, man. How you doing today?
I am doing well. Summer's going along well for you, I would assume.
So far, so good. A lot of pool time, which has been great. Got the tan going before I go on vacation, which is great. Always want to get that base. And, just enjoying some time off, which has been good. Getting ready for summer league starting this week. So,
yeah.
Looking forward to that.
Vacation, where are you going?
Orange Beach. Family goes to Orange Beach every year, and my sisters and my mom and their families and my sister's families. And we've been going for about 12 years, and it's always a great time. So looking forward to it again.
All right, now we have a super important injury to talk about. Red Panda goes down last night at halftime of the Commissioner's Cup for the WNBA. I mean, that was surprising. That was something, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't see the Red Panda go down very often, and if ever. And
first time I've seen it, to be honest with you.
I've seen her drop a plate one time, and it was shocking when she dropped a plate. But to see her fall, she's getting up there, and it's not.
She's on the back part of her prime.
No, she's on the back end. She's on the back nine, but. I don't know. I was talking to Jason earlier today and told him, that Slydeck, the guy who climbs the chairs to the roof. I mean, he's real old, and he terrifies me every time he climbs up those stairs because he could fall to his death.
Right.
So it's pretty frightening with these halftime performers. But Red Panda, certainly one of the best and loved by fans everywhere. And everyone's got their prayers out for her today to make sure she gets better because she's one of the great halftime performers in basketball.
55, that kind of blew me away when I saw that.
Wow.
55 doing that? Good Lord. Yeah. I mean, that's insane. But in all seriousness, we do have an injury to talk about. Jaren Jackson Jr. has turf toe, and he's going to have to get operated on. Grizzlies said about 10 to 12 weeks they'll reevaluate. I've gone through phases with the injuries. To the Grizzlies a couple of years ago, it was, pain, right? You feel pain. Eventually it became comical, and now you're back in that sort of pain scenario. Yeah, you feel positive about what they've done this offseason. We'll talk about what they've done in free agency and re-signing Santi, Jaren, adding Ty Jerome. But, I mean, what's your reaction at this point to consistently seeing Grizzlies PR throw out these injury updates?
It's I mean, you hate seeing them, and you just throw your hands in the air because it's like, when's it going to stop? You had a season where it was a lost season because of injuries, and you hate to go into a season knowing that you're going to be injured to start the season. Now, I always err on the side of caution, and to me, I'd expect Zach Edey to probably miss a month or two to start the season, and I would imagine with this timeline with Jaren, he might miss the start of the season as well. You just hate to start yourself behind the eight ball when the season begins without even a game being played. And that's kind of where the Grizzlies are right now. And, I think with Jaren, hopefully it won't be a lot of time that he'd miss in the season, if at all. Maybe he won't miss any time at all, but hopefully he won't miss any time because this is an injury that, Desmond Bane had something similar a couple of years ago, and it bothered him the entire year. So if there is a good news, it's good news that it got caught at this time, and it can be fixed by the time the season starts. So I'm not really that overly concerned about Jaren and missing a lot of time. I mean, he missed a couple of games last year to start the season, then went on and played like 60 straight. So I don't really fear, and Jaren's done a great job of coming back from injury in the past, so I'm not fearful of that. The one that scares me the most is you got to find a center. Somebody's got to play center to start the season.
Yep.
Zach Edey's not going to be available.
And they could find a fill-in. I know Goga Batadze has been thrown out there with the Magic and everything else. But if you are without Zach Edey and Jaron to start the year. Likely it would be, you know, Santi Aldama and Brandon Clark, as long as they stay injury free. But yeah. Beyond that, like what are we looking at? I mean, this is a small team already, and if they start the year without Zach Edey and Jaron Jackson Jr., they are very, very small.
Yeah, I mean, they got to address the center. It just has to be. And they got to find a body to find a big guy. I think the one thing we learned last year was that their depth wasn't as good as maybe we thought in the first half of the season when the schedule was very favorable. In the second half of the season, the depth wasn't very good. So it's not like you can just go down the line and expect to be really good to start the year and get by without having those guys. I think you got to find a replacement at some point for Zach, because as you mentioned, you don't want to just have one standard of play and that being go small. I mean, mm-hmm. that's going to be very difficult to win a lot of games. So I don't know. Hopefully they replace Zach. And again, hopefully Jaron, who's been a quick healer, hopefully he won't miss the start of the season. But, as I said, I'm always cautious on that side. And so I if he does miss the start of the season, hopefully it won't be too many games.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sham Sharania basically was a Grizzlies reporter to start free agency at 5:00 on Monday. It was like four or five straight tweets about the Grizzlies, and then there was one about Cole Anthony, and they're trying to offload that contract. But ultimately, the first two were re-signing Jaron, 5 years, $240 million, re-signing Santi, 3 years, $52.5 million. I do get a kick out of the people looking at this injury news and saying, did they know about it? Did Jaron give them the runaround? Yeah, well, they would have signed him to that money and that max regardless of the situation. But I think when you look at complaints from Grizzlies fans, which they're all fans find a way to complain, they look at value and $48 million for Jaron a year and $17.4 million for Santi. You've been around this franchise for a long time at this point. Do you concern yourself with value on contracts when it comes to re-signing, extending, free agents, whatever?
No, I mean, that's just the business of the NBA. I mean, if you want to keep Jaron, that's what you got to give him.
Right.
Santi, same sort of deal. I mean, other teams could have offered him that or more, or maybe they were offering a little bit less and the Grizzlies came in a little bit above. But, in the Grizzlies situation, if you're going to keep guys, you're either going to have to pay what, their contracts demand, like in Jaron's situation, or you might have to pay a little bit more to keep them, like in Santi's situation. If you want to do that, those are the things you're going to have to do if you're the Grizzlies. I never concern myself with what sort of money the guys are making, because the market dictates that.
Right.
And the team, just follows the market. So now the Grizzlies are in, the interesting situation of the apron and the cap and sure. All that on what they can do and what they can't do. I don't interest myself in that either. That's Zach Lyman's job. Mm-hmm. I want guys, and I want him to just figure out how to make it happen. So that's his job, and hopefully he can make those things happen. And so far, I think the Grizzlies have done a good job of it.
Yeah, and it's always interesting seeing, complaints about contract valuation for the Grizzlies. I think people need to completely, shift their mindset. Jaron and Santi are better than anything you could have gotten on the open market. Free agents don't necessarily come to Memphis, especially big-name free agents, so there is that. I just feel like people forget year to year. It's the price of doing business for any franchise, much less small market like Memphis.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, again, if you want to hold on to your guys, you're going to have to – I mean, Shea just got $285 million.
Right. And honestly, that was he took a bit of a discount because he could have signed next year for even more.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the price you got to pay. And then when Jalen Williams gets out of his rookie contract, you're going to have to pay him big. And, everybody said that about the Oklahoma City Thunder after they won the championship. You start thinking, okay, how long can this run go? Because now you got to start paying people. That's why you got to maybe pump the brakes a little bit when you start talking about dynasty for Oklahoma City, because they're going to go through it as well. But, if you want to hold on to your guys and you want to contend, you're going to have to pay that sort of money to these players. And, for a minute, Jaron was the highest paid player in NBA history. Heck, Mike Conley was the highest paid player in NBA history for a minute. I think we all remember that too, but you know, that's just the business of basketball. And if you're going to hold on to your guys, that's what you got to do. And, you know, the whole turf toe thing with Jaren, would it have mattered? No, I don't think so.
Not a bit.
I mean, if it happened, and who knows, it may have happened before they even did this deal, or it could have happened after, who knows. But bottom line is they would have done the deal anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, turf toe's not going to make you not do that deal and scare you away from it. So, you know, I don't think there's anything to complain about. I think the Grizzlies have, so far this offseason, they have addressed needs. They have fixed some needs, but there's still one glaring need, and that's a big.
Yep. Now, kind of exciting. First time since 2019, the Grizzlies have gotten like a non-minimum free agent. Mm-hmm. Ty Jerome, third and sixth man of the year voting, 12.5 points per game last year, can sort of facilitate offense, 44% from three. How do you feel about his fit? Did you like the signing?
Yeah, I do. I think he's another guy that he can defend. I mean, I think that what they've done both in the draft and in free agency is go get what, you know, Zach Kleiman described as dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what they've done. And I think Ty Jerome is one of those guys who can also add scoring. I mean, we saw it against the Grizzlies last year when he put in 26 against the Grizz and had a huge monster game. So he's very capable of scoring. But I think what he can add defensively as well is huge. Plus, he's another guy that can handle the ball. You know, I think that was one area the Grizzlies really struggled last year with ball handling. So to add another guy that can handle the ball, I think is very good for this team. And a guy that can create a little bit, but can also score and defend. I mean, I think the Grizzlies, that's kind of what they've done. You look at Cedric Coward and what he's able to do. You look at the two second-round picks and what they're able to do. It's about defense, defending. And the Grizzlies were dismal last year in defending. And I think they've addressed that this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I and also, speaking of value, I thought they got him on a pretty good value. Now, maybe that got crushed a little bit by the Pacers series, where he struggled to a certain extent. But it is what it is. Now, this is a tougher question, but when we talk about season expectations with the injuries now, I know the Jaren one's new, Edie one's not, and Desmond Bane no longer on this team. So it's obvious the ceiling or, you know, the idea of this team, the thoughts aren't as high. But, like, what to you, what is next season about for the Memphis Grizzlies?
Well, I think it's about one thing, and, you know, everything that we've just talked about is fine. And let's say they go get a big center to replace Zach Edey, at least to start the season and add some depth when Edey comes back. They do that. I think they're in a good spot, but it all comes down to one thing and one thing only. And that is, how many games does Ja Morant?
Correct. Yep.
I mean, that's it. That's the bottom line. It doesn't matter how many games Jaren's going to miss. It doesn't matter how many games Zach Edey's going to miss. How many games is Ja Morant going to miss? That's the key. Ja's got to play 65 games, or this team's going to, you know, have to battle like they did this past year to get in position and put themselves in a position for the playoffs. If Ja plays 65 games or more, I think the Grizzlies are right in that mix with the rest of the teams in the Western Conference. I think it all comes down to whether or not Ja's playing games. And that will dictate the success of the Memphis Grizzlies. If Ja plays 65-plus, I think the Grizzlies will be right in the mix with those other teams right behind Oklahoma City, kind of like it was this year. And you're going to battle for positioning. But if Ja doesn't play 65 games, you're probably in the same boat you were this year, battling for a spot, battling to even get into the top eight or top six. And, you know, and it'll be a struggle and an uphill climb. But if Ja Morant plays those games, I think the Grizzlies are right in the mix.
Yeah, I hate to simplify it, and it may sound reductionist, but I agree with you. I think next year is so much, all about, can Ja stay on the floor? Because everybody wants this all-in sort of mentality from the Grizzlies. The all-in championship contending mentality starts and ends, in my opinion, with Ja. When he's on the floor, they win games. When he's off the floor, they lose games. It's really simple.
He's the star of the team. He's the head of the snake. He's the, whatever you want to use to describe what Ja Morant means to this team. And not only, you know, is Ja great, but he makes the guys around him better as well. And, you know, it comes down to Ja being healthy and Ja being able to play games. I I'd like to see Ja go back to the dark and right. Ja with those midnight workouts and where we don't know what he's doing behind closed doors, and then come out with an edge and come out with that mentality to play, you know, all the games this season. He said that going into last year, that his goal was to play as many games as he could. And he fell short of being able to play a lot of games, fell short of the 65 game threshold and wasn't really even close. And, you know, the success of this team is based on him. And hopefully this is a year that he can play a lot of games. I'm hoping what I hoped for last year, unfortunately, I'm hoping for again this year.
Right.
And that was the revenge tour of Ja Morant. Mm-hmm. And to remind people who he is and how great he is. And hopefully that's the case this year, because if it's not, you know, Grizzlies will, they'll be as good as they can, but it's going to be a struggle. If he's healthy and can play most of the season, I think the Grizzlies will be fine.
Talking with Rob Fisher from FanDuel Sports Network, pre and post for the Grizzlies, and of course, sidelines. Now, free agency and offseason. I have to give credit where credit's due. Oklahoma City Thunder coming off of a title. You put them at the top, you give them their credit. But the West, a lot more complicated since we last talked. Rockets mm-hmm. get KD, they bring in DFS, they have a really good roster. And then the Nuggets, obviously they took that Thunder team to 7 games in the second round. But they had Tim Hardaway Jr., Jonas Valanciunas, bring back Bruce Brown, traded for Cam Johnson. Like, when you look at the Western Conference, it doesn't seem as easy for the Oklahoma City Thunder as when we last talked about this, discussed this.
Well, the regular season was certainly very easy for them, but the postseason wasn't, with a couple of series that went to 7 games with Denver and then in the NBA Finals as well. So I think those teams – you know, maybe are a little closer than what the standings dictated last year. I really like what Denver did. I think Denver just kind of secured their placement in the West, and right. just they added pieces that just fill in around what they do. I like the moves that they've made. They've been very good. They were, you know, a stagnant team last year, and I think it showed at the end of the regular season. So I think making those moves upgrades them, makes them better, makes them deeper, a lot deeper. And then Houston, I like the moves that they made, I think. But they that was, unlike Denver, Houston feels like an overhaul of their team. Mm-hmm. And a team that was, you know, the second-best team in the Western Conference last year. And they've made a lot of changes. And the big question is, you know, how healthy is Durant going to be? How many games is he going to play for Houston? And will they kind of, can they have chemistry right off the bat? So I think
on the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Might be a little tougher for Houston, at least at first. And maybe as the season goes on, it won't be. But I think those two teams kind of, maybe have separated themselves a little bit from the pack, but I don't think by much. Mm-hmm. I think they've improved and solidified their teams, but I don't know if they've done enough to catch Oklahoma City. I don't know if they've done enough to move away from the rest of the pack in the Western Conference. You know, I think last year there were two tiers, and this year I'd still go with two tiers in the Western Conference. And I don't think they've separated themselves enough to make it three tiers in the West.
Now, this may age poorly. We'll see what they do the rest of free agency, if they make some trades. But do you enjoy the Lakers flailing around as much as I do? Watching them try to sign a center or find a center. Brook Lopez signed elsewhere. Jonas Valanciunas has his new team. Yeah. Clint Capella signed with the Rockets. Like, do you enjoy this as much as I'm enjoying this?
I don't know what I enjoy more. The Lakers just floundering, or the Knicks, their coaching search and,
right.
and finally landed on Mike Brown and,
right.
You know, them feeling like they can get whatever they want every single year. And it's just not working that way. And the Lakers, it'll be interesting because they need a big guy big time. And they've lost a little bit with DFS leaving them. They pick up Jake LaRavia. Okay.
I like Jake, by the way. I know there's some Grizzlies fans that have different opinions.
I do, too, and maybe that's a good situation for him. You know, but I don't know. It's tough to say that they're not very good with when they got Luka and LeBron on the same team, but they got holes, not having a big and not having a bench. I mean, Lakers right. are they got things that they need to do, and I don't know how they can do it, especially if they can't get a free agent big to come join their team. But I guess there are still some other options that maybe they could go for. But so far, it's been a disappointment this offseason for the Lakers. LeBron picks up his extension, but the first thing people do when he picks up his extension is start talking about where he's going to play next.
Right. Do you buy any of that noise, by the way?
No, I don't.
Okay. The thing is, Bronny's still with the Lakers. All of his, business ventures are out in L.A. Regardless, yeah. I know he wants a championship team, and Rich Paul said as much, his agent, but it still feels like sort of the off-season playbook that we talk about in sports talk for LeBron James. Like, I've gotten used to that type of noise and nothing coming from it.
And with that contract, I mean, Cleveland, everybody says he's going to Cleveland. Well, my God, what they'd have to give up for him? I mean, you'd tear that team apart.
Mm-hmm.
A team that, won 60 games last year.
Right.
And a team that I would project would win 60 games again this year and probably win the Eastern Conference. So why would you screw that up? And I don't think they would. But I don't know. It'll be fun come trade deadline time when his name comes up and everybody's wondering where he's going to go. But, boy, that – $50+ million, that's tough to make even on a trade.
Yeah. Now, Knicks hired Mike Brown. You already mentioned that. But, like, I just want to rewind to sort of the first week after they fired Tom Thibodeau. What did you make of them reaching out to sitting head coaches with success? Ime Udoka and Chris Finch. Like, that just feels like a super entitled, annoying way to go about things. I've never really seen that on that level. Like, we've seen certain teams and franchises reach out to other coaches on other teams, but it's like one or two. They reached out to five separate ones before they even started a search.
Yeah. Now, at least what people say is that happens all the time and just goes unreported. And maybe it was just reported for the Knicks, but to me, when you fire a guy who's had success as a coach, the most success as a coach in New York in over two decades, and gets to the Eastern Conference Finals, and you fire him,
mm-hmm.
I would assume you have you got a piece of paper in your back pocket that's got your candidates and guys you'd like to replace them with, and you have an idea of someone who's better than Tom Thibodeau. But to just blindly try to go after coaches who are already established and not get permission to talk to them, well, that's a failure. And then to talk about how you want to get a guy who could be a voice to take them to the next level, and you just need a coach that can take them to the next level. Well, the guys you're settling on, that, I mean, Taylor Jenkins, where's the proof that he could take you to the next level? Mike Brown, where's the proof he could take you to the next level? I mean, James Borrego, where's that proof? And then Dawn Staley. I mean, my goodness, what are we doing? I think it's been ridiculous what they've tried to do, and disappointing. And Mike Brown, I don't know how many people are excited about Mike Brown being the next head coach of the Knicks, but it's comical for sure.
Yeah, like Mike Brown is. You fired a coach because he couldn't get over the top. Mike Brown is proven to not be that guy. So I that's interesting in itself. Final thing, and I have to do this every time we talk. Our Cardinals are kind of floating around, although they just got swept by the Pittsburgh Pirates. That's no fun.
Yeah, and didn't score a run either.
Yeah. I hope the wheels aren't falling off, but I've been cautiously, I guess, optimistic this entire season so far.
It's been more interesting than I think anyone envisioned. To at least be in a race at this point of the season. I don't think anyone thought that would happen with the Cardinals. But and to go to Cleveland and get that sweep was great, but then to go to Pittsburgh and get swept sucks. I think that's just kind of the Cardinals as they are.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are just flaws. The thing that I was thinking about during this Pirate series, they got a lot of guys that should be hitting 7, 8, and 9.
Right.
And they're all throughout the lineup.
Yeah.
Sure. And that's the problem. You don't. It's just it's a flawed lineup Your starting staff, Sonny Gray's great. Palante's been unbelievable here recently. Fetty's starting to get knocked around a little bit. Liberatore's been okay. But I don't think you have a good enough starting staff. Your bullpen's pretty good. But your lineup's just, you know, 1 through 9 is just not, it's not a balanced lineup at all. And I think that's ultimately what does the Cardinals in. But
right. But
again, so far up to this point, I mean, to be in contention for the Central Division and to be in contention for a wild card is more than I think anyone expected at this point. I think it'll be interesting to see what the Cardinals do at the trade deadline. You know, are they buyers or are they sellers? And right. If they're sellers, I think it'd be disappointing for a lot of Cardinals fans. And if they're buyers, you know, how far do they actually go?
That's what I'm saying. They're not heavy buyers anymore. Like what I've had to come to grips with, which is tough, and I think a lot of Cardinals fans, like it used to be a destination. Free agents, trade targets, they want to be in St. Louis. It's just not, it's not that way anymore. And it's until the team gets sold or something like that, I don't think it'll ever be back there.
You know why they're not going there?
Because they don't spend money.
Crime. It's the crime.
Oh, it's thanks, Stephen A. Appreciate it. Rob A. Fisher with the
No, that's certainly not the case. I don't know. It's not a free agent destination, but I don't think they're searching for like big time free agents either. I mean, that's
because they're not going to spend the money that it takes.
No,
it's just the truth.
No.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. But, Rob, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for joining.
Gabe, always a pleasure, man. Anytime.
Yes, sir. He is Rob Fisher.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sure, pre and post for FanDuel Sports Network, also sidelines for the Grizzlies. As well, you can follow him on X at the Fish Nation. Now we need to go ahead and hop into the Blitz, and we're gonna pick up where we had a conversation with Rob about it. I want to get to the Knicks making their hire of Mike Brown. We'll do that next.
Now the biggest stories, overloading the line, a bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis's sports station.
Gabe, it looks like the Knicks coaching search is coming to a close. The Knicks are expected to hire Mike Brown as their next head coach.
How about it? Like I said, I think this was last week, they were the 50-year-old who, were in a long-term marriage, who, got the divorce, tried to get back into the club scene, realized, it didn't really work out for them. They don't have it the same way. So they finally created that dating profile. Their daughter created that dating profile for them. They got back on the open market and found people that were sort of or partners that were at least in their league. It was Taylor Jenkins, James Borrego, and Mike Brown. And the fact that you fire Tom Thibodeau because he couldn't get over the top, and those were your three options, is absolutely insane. If we go through Mike Brown's history, his last five seasons as a head coach, 2012, 2013, fired by the Lakers after five games. 2013, 2014, fired by the Cavs after one season. And then it got interesting. In 22, 23, when he got hired by the Kings, great. He was the NBA coach of the year, but then missed the playoffs and then fired after 31 games after a terrible start. I just don't understand how the Knicks completely screwed this entire search up. I don't think Mike Brown's a bad coach. But to get rid of Tom Thibodeau for not getting you over the top, to get a guy who perpetually has not gotten his teams over top, is absolutely baffling. And I still look back at the early sort of coaching search and how they went about it. They asked five sitting head coaches and franchises if they could basically poach their coach, and that just seems like an entitled way to go about things. But we'll see if Mike Brown can get them over the top. I would bet not. I would bet not.
It's one of those hires where if it was just about Mike Brown, I would think overall it was a very good hire by the New York Knicks. But then when you look at who he is replacing in Tom Thibodeau, I think that they're probably taking a little bit of a step down because Tom Thibodeau was able to get them to the heights that they did. That being said, Mike Brown is a very good basketball coach, and it's not a bad hire. It's just kind of a unnecessary one
right.
overall.
The firing and the hiring of Mike Brown was completely unnecessary.
Right. Now, the good news for the New York Knicks, and it sounds odd saying this, but the injuries that have happened in the Eastern Conference
right.
will probably help them be able to get back to the Eastern Conference Finals next year in the East. Like the New York Knicks, I'm very happy that they decided to mostly run it back with the team that they have. They're getting some additions. Like Yabusele is going to be a really good addition for them. It looks like the Jordan Clarkson may be a New York
sure.
Knick. That bench, they're going to get a little bit more depth, which was something that we talked about heading into the offseason. We said, you know, we understand why Tom Thibodeau got fired. We didn't necessarily agree with it, but ultimately their depth is as far as it's going to take them, and they're trying to shore that up a little bit. So ultimately, I think, you know, even though this hire may have been unnecessary, it's probably going to work out.
I don't,
for the most part.
I still don't like how this all played out, but
yeah.
I will say Mike Brown is the style of coach that makes sense with the Knicks.
Absolutely.
He's experienced.
Yeah.
He's been to an NBA Finals. He's had success with stars and veteran players, which is what the Knicks need right now. And he's a defensive coach. Now, Tom Thibodeau was as well, and obviously the defense completely flailed around. Your two stars, you have to have them for offense, and Karl-Anthony Towns and Jalen Brunson, but it almost felt like you had to have one of them off the floor at a time to sort of help your defense, especially when they got in that series against the Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals. But he's a defensive head coach, and that's where they need help. That's their get-over-the-top piece that they need to sort of figure out if they're going to get to an NBA final.
And like you said, he is a proven NBA head coach. He's won Coach of the Year twice. He won it once with Cleveland. He won it once with Sacramento. He has a clearly above 500 record when you look at his overall record. He's been to the NBA Finals before with the Cleveland Cavaliers. He's a multiple-time champion as lead assistant
right.
with the Golden State Warriors. This is an accomplished basketball coach, and it is a good hire by the Knicks. It's just odd that they're hiring.
It was in a vacuum,
right,
it would be fine, but it's not. We know what led to this, the firing of Tom Thibodeau, another coach that you could say all those great things about.
Sure.
Just ridiculous. And I thought there was entitlement at the beginning of the thing, and you end up landing on Mike Brown. I would say to this, you know, with the guys that they sort of had in this coaching search by the end, Taylor Jenkins was among them. Taylor Jenkins, defensive guy. I don't know why you don't just go with Taylor Jenkins. At least, like, in the end of the day, like, Mike Brown, compared to Tom Thibodeau, he is perpetually not getting over the top. And that's what you fired Tom Thibodeau for. At least, like, Taylor Jenkins showed that he could build a team, have some success. And you don't know the situation. Could he get a team over the top? Will he not? You don't necessarily know. But I know Mike Brown won't, though. Like, I hate to say it that way, but it just feels that way.
I don't know.
It feels like no matter where he's been hired, it's always sort of gone down. It may start great, but it sort of goes downhill, trends in the wrong direction
yeah,
after a couple of years.
I will say, outside of the Cleveland teams as him being a head coach, this will be the most talented team he has had. I'm not counting his assistant time with the Golden State Warriors because he wasn't the head coach there.
It's probably the best roster top to bottom.
Without a doubt. So, you know, I think that the Knicks probably looked at it and said, Mike Brown is the safer hire than somebody like Taylor Jenkins. He's more proven. We know he can get a team to the NBA Finals. I think the Eastern Conference is going to be much weaker next season than it was this mm-hmm. year. They're probably going to be able to get back to the Eastern Conference Finals. And if they have more success with Mike Brown next season than they have with Tom Thibodeau this season, I wouldn't be shocked. Again, though, I think it's more to do with the Eastern Conference and them shoring up the roster. But I think that Mike Brown is just a safe pair of hands. And when you're firing somebody like Tom Thibodeau, I think that they tried to go after some big names, got turned down. So they ultimately said, we've got to turn to a safe pair of hands where we know he's not going to crash it. And you
right.
know that Mike Brown's not going to crash it. Taylor Jenkins, I think, would have been a good
crash
hire.
It.
But I think that Jenkins just has some question marks about
not his experience.
Right. His experience, but also what offense is he going to run?
Right.
You know, it's can he maximize Jaylen Brown when we saw what he did last year with Ja Morant? And I think that those questions probably prevented him from getting the job.
That's fair.
Today, ESPN released the NFL Bag Hall of Fame, and they were basing it off of They wanted to reward the players who did the best job of maximizing their leverage and getting paid for their ability, players who pushed holdouts to the next level, players who bet on themselves and were handsomely rewarded for doing so, and players who even managed to represent themselves in negotiations and pocket millions of dollars that would have otherwise gone to an agent. There are eight players that they have presented for their bag-getting Hall of Fame. I'm going to read them off to you,
okay.
And then I want you to tell me, of this group, who would be your number one bag getter?
Deal.
You have Kirk Cousins, Joe Flacco, Dak Prescott, Jalen Ramsey, Darrell Revis, Dion, Matthew Stafford, and Laremy Tunsil.
Okay, Laremy Tunsil is kind of a sleeper there because he's gotten a lot of money. Never been in a super successful situation, but there's two. Can I go two tied for first?
Sure.
Let's go Kirk Cousins and Dak Prescott, guys that have never had playoff success. Three combined wins in the playoffs between the both of them, and they're both way into probably $200 million worth of career earnings. Those are the guys that you have to put at the top of this list. Like Joe Flacco, he won a Super Bowl. He's still around, still making money. I'll give him credit for the Super Bowl. He had some playoff success. He was a Super Bowl MVP, so I don't want to put him there. Dion, he's one of the best corners of all time and won a bunch of Super Bowls. Matt Stafford, I guess you could throw in here, but I feel like Matt Stafford earned his money, right?
He sacrificed his body.
With Detroit and when the Lions were just terrible, he consistently produced and got beat up on a consistent basis. He deserved all the money that came to him. And with the Rams, here's a Super Bowl, right? They bring him in. He was the get-over-the-top piece. So I don't know how you feel about this. I think I'm going to go tied for first, 1A, 1B. Let's go Kirk Cousins and Dak among those particular names.
I would have said, you know, when I first read this headline and I hadn't read the piece yet.
It's Bill Barnwell, I believe.
It's great work. It's great work. And, you know, on this station specifically, we talk about the bag getters all the time in the Hall of Fame bag getters. And all of these names, I think, make sense. But I do think that Kirk Cousins is probably the cream of the crop. Now, what's interesting, and you brought this up to me when I presented this. They don't have backups on here.
I wish they would.
That there are a couple backups that absolutely deserve to be mentioned. You said Case Keenum.
Case Keenum's still around. Case Keenum's got commercials because of it's an insurance company, I believe. I can't remember. It might be Progressive where they do the backup quarterback commercials. I think Jacoby Brissett has one, but Case Keenum has one as well. Like, looking at some of those guys, that it's almost like a joke that they're still in the league and still backing people up and have the best job in football as a backup to a guy that ultimately is going to play most of the year. Like, I feel like those guys should be added to this.
How much money do you think Case Keenum has made over 12 seasons in the NFL?
It's only 12.
Only 12.
Okay.
Yeah, his rookie
right
season
around,
was 2012.
Right around 45, 50 million.
$55 million.
God.
Dollars. This man deserves to be in the bag getting Hall of Fame.
And he
$55 million is a backup.
And here's the thing.
Incredible.
He got to start a couple of years. He got the Vikings to an NFC championship. The Minnesota Miracle, right? The Minneapolis Miracle, whatever they call it. I mean, I think those guys should be added to this, quite frankly. Because those guys are truly bag getters. Just convincing teams to sign them year after year after year for decent money to be a backup. I mean, Case Keenum's a Bear now, right?
Yeah.
He's there to sort of teach Caleb Williams the ropes.
I mean, Chase Daniel, $41 million over his career.
And he parlayed that into an FS1 job.
Yeah.
So there's that. Like, you usually forget about those guys. I feel like those guys should be added to this list. Those are what I think of as bag getters. Some of the names that are in that article, it's like, well, they were just fantastic players. They're Pro Bowlers, all pros. I mean, in Joe Flacco's case, we have a Super Bowl MVP, right? I feel like I have almost more respect in the bag getting category for the backups or just sort of those role-playing guys that end up with a bag every single year.
Can I ask you? Jimmy Garoppolo.
That's a great one. That is an awesome one. But I guess Bill Barnwell didn't add him to it because he had Tom Brady's agent, I think, for the longest time. And I don't know if he negotiated contracts on his own behalf.
Garoppolo's career earnings is absurd.
He's well over 100.
$151 million.
He should have been added. He should have been added without question.
With little to no success.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. What other quarterbacks do you put in this category? What other quarterbacks in the NFL in recent memory?
Technically, Jamarcus Russell earned a bag while being a bust.
That's one contract. Yeah. So I don't know if I can do that.
Taysom Hill?
That's a bag getter for sure. But he's also he does some good things for the Saints.
What
still.
Matt Flynn?
Matt Flynn, that's a good one. Carson Wentz, do we throw him on there?
Carson Wentz isn't bad. Luke McCown.
Luke McCown.
Honestly, being a backup quarterback in the NFL when you have a bona fide starter in front of you, not a bad
good
gig.
Deal.
Good deal. I take it.
Yeah, but those eight names, like I think of bag getters differently. I don't know about you, right? Like Deion Sanders is like, well, he was the best quarter of all time. Of course he made a bag.
Of course Deion got a bag.
Yeah, but I do think like when he says like negotiating by themselves and pocketing the money that would have gone to an agent, I guess that's where he's getting it from.
I think
it makes sense.
One of the best pulls on this list, though, is probably Laremy Tunzel, like you said.
Right. He's still good, though. He's been an all-pro and a pro bowler before. But I just have respect for the guys who are never pro bowlers or all pros, but just make money and get signed contract after contract after contract and have, you know, like Case Keenum, 12 to 15 year careers, just making millions of dollars every year and not having to do anything. All right, now, you don't have to spend a whole lot of money at Boom City Fireworks. We have 4th of July coming up, and they have two locations that you need to take advantage of, 3rd Street South or Get Well at State Line Road. They have the largest fireworks selection in the Mid-South, open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., shop out of the heat and air conditioning, and again, largest selection of fireworks in stock right this second. They have sparklers, Roman candles, firecrackers, poppers, cakes, artillery shells, and even more. You can check out all their specials. They have daily specials and all of their, you know, different fireworks at their Facebook page, Boom City Fireworks. Shop early to avoid the rush. But now is the time to get your fireworks for the 4th of July festivities at Boom City. Two air-conditioned locations, 3rd Street South and Get Well at State Line Road. Both are open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Head to Boom City Fireworks. That's Boom City Fireworks. Now, we need to wrap up today's edition of the Gabe Kuhn Show. Coming up next, we'll rewind right here, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.